Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball with longtime Cajun fan Mike Hebert. How are you this morning, Mike?
Doing great. The Cajun basketball team is doing better than my bowling lately. Hopefully, I'll get out of my slump tonight.
Well, I hope you get out of your slump, but I hope the Cajuns don't get in one. So,
We agree on that. We agree on that.
the Cajuns have played quite well recently. Exciting. Not only well, I think very exciting basketball as well. I had some conversations with Kevin Foote, and he asked me if I was surprised about the Cajuns' winning success in this little streak they're on. Are you surprised at all?
That's a good question. I would say no, because they play so well at home. I am surprised that they're winning games generally by double figures at home. As competitive as college basketball is, where anybody can beat anybody, I would have thought we would have had a buzzer beater or two in there. I was surprised we won three straight on the road.
Okay, that's what I was going to bring up. To me, that's the biggest part of the surprise for me.
Right, which they were able to parlay that into the home streak. Speaking of Kevin, he's written an outstanding article on the status of the program, and it appears in the print version of this morning's Katie Advocate, and I'm sure it's online too. So I encourage people to go read that. I'm going to send Kevin another complimenting him on how well he did on that article. A lot of great stats of the team's doing, but not just dry numbers, interesting numbers that show you why they're having success.
Yeah, if you're not following Kevin Foote on Twitter, you really should. I believe it's footnotes. He in if nothing else during the Saints game, it's pure comedy. So it's fun to, but no,
Yeah,
Kevin,
entertainment for sure, regardless of how the Saints are doing, good or bad. But that aside, his article this morning was outstanding.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. I know he wrote a couple other ones that I was always impressed with.
Yeah, he had one yesterday. He had one on the Saturday night's win, but the one he had today was sort of the status of the team at this point of the season.
Oh, good. I wish I'd have read that before we got
Probably
on, but
can't.
I don't want to steal his thunder.
Probably came a little bit from the weekly press conferences. I'm sure Coach Moreland had one yesterday since it was Monday.
Yep. Well, good deal. Well, Mike, ULM comes to town trying to
They had
remember,
won
that
three
was a,
straight. They had won three straight. Very impressive with three impressive wins.
is that a Wednesday night though?
It was a
Or
Wednesday night.
Thursday?
It was
And
last week.
I don't understand it to some extent, and I know they can't do it with everybody, but some of these games like the ULM game, when we play there, when they play here, I know they're not going to bring a lot of people, but those should be Saturday games when you're that close to another team, in my
Right.
opinion.
The
But
well, actually, there's a group of Rebounding Club members that actually travel with the team a lot, and on a Saturday you probably had a few people going to ULM. Could be
yeah.
tougher on a Thursday, and I'm one of them. I try to make hopefully I'll make the Southern Miss game. That'll be on there. At least Southern Miss game's on a Saturday this year. Both games are on Saturday as we
Good.
get towards the end of the season. But yes, I agree. Both ULM games and both Southern Miss games should be on Saturdays. Versus Alabama's not a far trip either. I know fans who went to that game, but I would have preferred to switch those two games around.
And that's what I'm saying, because I go through the thing, and Troy's a little bit further at 7 hours, but even Texas State, and that's part being a little partial to going to San Marcos. Texas State's always a good trip as well.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I had
all
family
right.
in San Antonio one time. I probably would have made a trip if it had been a Saturday game, probably this year. But that's not the case anymore.
All right, well, let's jump right in. Let's talk some basketball. We've gone a little two more Cajun victories. ULM comes in, as we said, on Wednesday night. Your thoughts?
Well, I was real. Excuse me. Excuse me for a second.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry about that. Well, my thoughts are that I was encouraged from the tip when Joe Charles hit a couple of threes. Now, when Joe plays defense, he always brings energy. When he hit those two threes early, gave the Cajuns a slight lead. It brought the whole team energy because he's such a popular player among fans and teammates because of the effort he puts out. And what's encouraging there too was he usually hits those threes from the corner. It's really good, the short corner three. Not necessarily as good from the top of the key or on the wing. Both of those came pretty quickly in the half-court offense on the top of the key. So I said, oh, that's a good sign. So we had a little lead from Joe there. And then as the half continues, we're able to extend just a little bit into a moderate lead with our 1-2-2 press. First couple of times, the Warhawks saw they handle it. I'm sure they, you know, people are starting to be aware of it and they study film on the Cajuns. But we got a 10-second call out of it. And then that spurred a couple more turnovers. And, you know, we've got a 6-8-point lead for most of the first half. So I never really felt uncomfortable in this game after the early start. And I knew they had some big guys inside. They might get some rebounds. And I knew they had a good player in Nico Metz. I can't even say his last name. So for the purpose of this conversation, we're going to just say Nico, okay?
Sounds good.
Yes.
Did he seem a little off to you, though? I mean, we saw him run into the locker room.
He may have had a little bug, but he played pretty well. His minutes were mid-20s or so. Yeah, he might have had a little bug. Speaking of him, he came in a game with, 8 minutes gone or so, and he was obviously one of their best players. We started the game by Joe's our best defensive player, and speaking of Joe Charles, I'm always amazed at his defense. He'll guard a guard, he'll guard a center, he'll guard a forward like here. Well, anyway, so Joe's guarding him, but then ULM has their men pick on him, set picks for him when he has the ball, and basically we like to switch a lot of our guys, and so we get some defensive switches, and Joe's not on him, and he makes a couple of baskets, and they're back in the game. Where we can't extend for a while. So his play was somewhat effective. So when you watch the Cajuns in the future, and if Joe's guarding someone, see what the other teams do to try to get him off their best player defensively. That might be something to watch if you're just a casual fan. But then Michael Thomas comes off the bench, and I think that might have been the best offensive game of his career. I think he had a career high, but in the first half, he was close to double figures, and really impressed with his performance in that game because he was hitting, I call it three levels. He hit some mid-range, he hit some threes, and he hit some driving to the basket with the shot clock running down. So that allowed us to extend the lead to double figures with Michael Thomas.
His play of recently, and I said this a couple weeks ago, I was a little bit of I was a critic of Michael Thomas, not here on the podcast necessarily, but talking with friends, and he has stepped up tremendously, especially at a time when we've needed him.
Yeah. Well, Coach Marlin has told him, just be aggressive, have confidence in yourself. We know you're a good player. Just don't worry about missing a shot. Sometimes that happens. A player will miss a couple of shots and they don't want to shoot anymore. And that's not the case here with Michael. You know, he's staying aggressive the whole game. So, we go out to a 17-point lead, and then the Warhawks cut it a little bit before half, and we talked about Nico making a few baskets. He was actually responsible for some other baskets, but he didn't do anything. Or a couple of times, the Cajuns just doubled him when he had the ball and he got a hockey assist. Or we prevented him from getting the ball. So we got two guys on him, so he can't even get the ball. That's how much respect we had for him. And some of the other guys scored at the basket. So they cut the lead to 12. It was 17. But, with a 12-point lead at half, this is another thing, too. We're holding our own on the boards. They're the top rebounding team in the league, and we're holding our own on the board. So everything's encouraging. Now, people have asked me what was going on with the strange occurrence on the end of the ULM bench. I've seen some highlights of it, where one of their players got in a scuffle with one of the other guys. What I understanding was this player, I don't remember his name, he's number 34, actually was frustrated that one of the other guys was not passing him the ball when he was open, or at least one time, and they had some words. And things escalated. And then he's escalated off the, escorted off the court, kicks his trash can on the way out. From a team that had won three games in a row, seemed to be playing well, and coached by Coach Richard, I was shocked to see that happen. What's your thoughts on that incident?
Yeah, I did not see the initial altercation until middle of the second half. Someone showed me the video, but then his teammate walked him off the court, and people said he was escorted off by security. No, he wasn't. It wasn't until he kicked the trash can and walked off that the cop followed him out, basically, just to make sure that he wasn't going to, I guess, destroy anything else, but which he didn't destroy the trash can. But you're right, Mike. I am a little bit surprised. As much as we like to rag on ULM and beating them, I think Keith Richard is a good coach, and I'm surprised that the team lost the discipline. But that's kind of what happens when you're bringing in a lot of transfers the way he has lately.
Yeah. So that could be part of it. And I don't know if that young man is still on the team or not. I suspect that if it had happened here, he would be suspended for several games at least. And,
I did not see him. I did not see him on the bench on Saturday's game. I forgot who they played because we played late and they played early.
They play Texas State? No, they didn't play Texas State. I forgot who they played. Maybe it was Arkansas State. They went to Arkansas State. That's probably why we played Wednesday, Saturday, because they came here and then had to go back and go all the way to Arkansas State. To me, that could have been Thursday, Saturday. So if you did not see him on the bench, he may be suspended. Fortunately, we don't have those issues here. It's just sort of a strange occurrence.
Yeah, now he is still listed on their roster, and they may not take him out, but...
What's his name?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I knew you...
He's number 34, so if you ever watch ULM on the ESPN Plus.
Yeah, I'm trying. I have it up here. But it was D-I-E-D-H-I-O-U.
Yeah, it starts A-D-A-D. Yeah. He had an interesting stat line in the game. He played 8 minutes, and he did not record one stat. No field goal attempts. No free throws attempted, no rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks, no turnovers, no fouls. That's hard to do.
He is from Dakar, Senegal. So, okay.
Yeah, I read a book once about a guy who played for Purdue, and he was a walk-on. And he would actually try to get the zero stats, but still hustle.
Really?
Yeah.
So he actually came from he went to Odessa Junior College, then UAB, and then he did not play last year due to a knee injury. So probably some of that too is that he's frustrated, you know, after sitting out a year, that I kind of don't blame him wanting the ball a little bit. So yep.
Well, let's get back to the Cajuns. You know, I'm sure you're comfortable at half. Most people around me, we have a 12-point lead. Not concerned, but I'm not 100% confident we're going to win the game yet, because ULM had gotten hot from three in some of their previous games, and they dominated the board some of those games, and we're doing okay on the boards, but can that continue is what I worried about. But Kobe Julian, at the beginning of the second half, he hit three early threes, but they're not hitting any in the first half, and that lead balloons to 19, and then we're pretty much playing with house money the rest of the way. Were you surprised Kobe got hot at that point after struggling in the first half?
No, because he's a shooter. When you talk about calling someone a shooter, they're going to be streaky. And once he gets hot, that's who you want to continue to feed. It's like Kentaro Garnett. If he comes down and hit one, he's probably going to hit the next one. But the problem is sometimes he may go 6 minutes without getting a good look at the basket. So he's not going to hit the third one maybe. But yeah, no, not surprised at all on Kobe.
And teams have started just like last season to take Cantrell's three-pointer away. You know, I've noticed when they were getting a fast break and he's trying to get the transition three off the corner, somebody's making sure they follow him. Yeah, so like I said, teams scout us just like we scout them. But anyway, Kobe got us in a good shape there. But, you know, we can't put the game away. We can't get to a 20-point lead. It goes back to the mid-teams, or closer to 12 or whatever. Because of foul trouble on the Cajuns. I think at one point, Timas had three. Hosanna had three. Mike Thomas didn't have, excuse me, Kobe, I don't think had any in the first half. He gets hot there, but he gets four real quick ones. So the foul trouble allows the Warhawks to stay with their strike distance. I mean, just like in the first half when he provided a spark, Mike Thomas got a couple of buckets to keep us at a comfortable lead and make the Warhawks, you know, have to play from behind. And then, middle part of the second half, the game turned into a foul fest, and people around me said, man, we're going to get out of here at 10 o'clock as many fouls as they're calling. were you so what's your reaction to that? You know, the first half was not a lot of false calls, a bunch called all of a sudden.
I think there was that the game that we Kobe got a technical?
I don't remember.
Well, I just I thought there was a little pushing and shoving there at one point, and no, there was no technical fouls. Never mind. That might not have been the game I said, but I thought there was a little pushing and shoving there, and I thought that it might. I thought the refs might have been trying to get it under control, but then it went crazy. It went crazy, and I just don't get that because that it seems to me like they've been letting everybody play, you know, all season long, and then all of a sudden we got into that, and then one of my friends commented in the first half, well, if they would call more fouls, guys would stop fouling. Well, they started calling more fouls in the second half, and they didn't stop fouling. So he goes, I guess that logic wasn't very good. I said, well, it's a great thought.
They're calling it pretty tight. It's not all on the players. And that allowed that situation allowed the Warhawks to get back into the game. At one point, they had six straight possessions. The Cajuns had six straight possessions, which a foul was called on them. Coach Marlin, actually, I guess some guys in the bench, our assistants keep track of that. He complained to the officials about that. In that same situation, Kyron Radley fouls out. You know, he was playing for Hosanna. Hosanna had three fouls, so they were trying to play both of them. The Warhawks actually hit a couple threes. They didn't hit many in the game, but they hit a couple there. And all of a sudden, the lead's down to 10. Not uncomfortable, but there's something psychological about that double-figure, single-figure lead. You know, we really didn't get them, let them get below 10 until the very end of the game. The Cajuns did something that was very smart at that point. They went to their 1-3-1. We got a lead, got a steal rather, and the lead went back to 12. You know, where we have Joe at the top. In this case, Michael Thomas, as he was playing better than Contrell, was running in the back line. So we got the steal, got the lead back to 12. So everybody's feeling much better. Then, you know, we're trying to run the clock. It was one possession where we didn't score, but we ran a whole minute because we got two offensive rebounds and just ran more clock. I think Hosanna got one of them. Maybe Joe got the other. So smart play there. Cajuns there. When they got the offensive rebounds, they didn't put it right back up. They ran some clock.
You know, and that's what I was going to bring up. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But
I was done with my point. Go ahead.
That whole minute there, because if you just look at the play-by-play, you know, you go 236 to 136, and then the end of the game, the Cajuns only score 1 point with 236 left in the game, or 253. But what happens there, to your point, is that we get an offensive rebound, we get the ball back, so we're able to run clock. So my question to you, though, is, you know, it's a 10-point game, a 9-point game with 236, a 10-point game with 136. Were you surprised that ULM didn't try to foul at all to get back in the game a little bit?
Yes. Yeah.
I just felt like they gave up.
Yeah, I don't know if they gave up or they thought they'd actually get the rebound or get a steal. But, you know, they let us run a lot of clock there, too. And I give credit to our guys for good ball movement in that situation. When the ball's moved around that quick.
Absolutely. Keeping the ball moving, and you don't want to get that intentional type foul or anything like that. So I understand that, but I was shocked they didn't try to put pressure on us or more pressure, I should say. So
yeah, well, sometimes too, but the league's double figures. It's 10. If you foul, it goes to 12. Like that too. So there's a fine line there where you get to foul or shouldn't. I think most teams will start to foul if they're within 2 to 3 possessions when it's 4 possessions. They did score the final basket of the game to make it an 8-point game, but basically that was a double figure win for the Cajuns.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Didn't bother me there with that last basket. So let's move on to Saturday night.
Let's talk a little bit more about a couple of points I want to make about the winning game. Looking at the box score, this has to be really encouraging, where the Cajuns held out rebounded the top rebounding team in the Sun Belt Conference. They were out rebounding their opponents by 5. I think we out rebounded them by 2, something like that. Yeah, so that was outstanding. The Warhawks only made 3 3-pointers, and the Nico guy only had 10 points, only 2 in the second half. And Joe has another double double, so there's a lot of positives. Now, one thing that surprised me, do you know ULM had more field goals than the Cajuns?
I was going to bring some of that up because the thing that's just really mind-boggling to me is ULM shoots 60% in the first half, 55% for the game, and lose the game.
Yeah, they should. And when you're at the game, you don't realize they're shooting that high percentage. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, we're getting a lot of steals, getting turning them over, so they're not getting as many shots up. And the other thing, too, we're limiting them to one shot. If they miss, they didn't get a chance to put it back up again. So the turnovers and limiting them to one shot. And we ran them all the three-point line. They don't shoot a lot of threes, but I think they wanted to shoot more. As opposed to the Cajuns' strategy is, you know, we want to shoot threes, not cover threes. We want to shoot open threes. And we run some plays to get guys. You know, we're Timus or Michael to penetrate. And, you know, and we've got guys who can shoot. Sometimes it's stuff with defense. Kobe can make threes. Cantrell can make threes. Michael Thomas can make threes. Joe Charles can make threes. We talked about he got us off to a good start. So when you got a lot of guys who can make the threes, the defense can only take so much away. And so we incorporate that into our offense. And even if the three-point shot did not exist, the Cajuns still would have won by 1 point because we had more free throws than they did. But, you know, that's sort of silly. It sort of indicates the analytics. You know, you want to shoot threes. I just talk about pro teams want to shoot 43s. I think that's ridiculous. But you want to shoot open threes, and we do a good job of getting those. And we out-rebounded them. So really encouraged by the way we out-rebounded the Warhawks.
And for the fourth game in a row to that point, we had hit over 80% of our free throw shots too. So
that's right. That's right. Yeah. So, and then our players recently, that we talked about it last week, have talked about free throws as an emphasis for them in practice and after practice on their own. And so all that's leading to success. All right. Yeah. We can move on to Saturday night if you like now.
Absolutely. Sorry about that, Mike.
I want to make those points about the 3-point difference and the rebounding.
Yep. No, we usually talk about stats for the game, and I don't know why I wanted to move on so quick. So most people probably didn't notice, but Coach Riley was not on the bench for the South Alabama game or the previous game at Texas State. His mother had passed away, so prayers to him and his family, to Coach Riley for South Alabama. Never an easy time when a parent passes away, so...
Understandable, he's not there, and I want to make a point on that in regards to our team when we get to the end of this conversation. Okay. But it was obvious when this game started, the Cajuns would have a good game on the glass. You know, we actually rebounded him by quite a bit in Mobile, so I figured that would continue. Hosanna was going to have a good game, I felt, and he did. And we got out an early lead because we were getting some second shots. Now, the Jags, you know, early in the game, we can't really separate and make it a blowout early because just like in Mobile, their guards, I like to call it bully ball. They just want to drive the ball down to the goal and keep pushing our man down. And they had a little limited success in that because they have some big guards. So Cajuns are rebounding well. The Jags are playing bully ball. And so, you know, Cajuns have a lead. You know, filling out process is 5, 6, 7 points. And then I noticed this, the Cajuns and the Jags both had a stretch. I won't say it was sloppy, but both teams had trouble finishing at the rim. Did you notice that?
Yeah. I shouldn't say a lot of it. Some of it, though, when we talk about sloppy basketball, some of it's good defense. I'm not sure that was the case, but I remember thinking that during the game that this is some really good defense being played right now. But at the same time, I'm not sure that was the case during the time that you're talking about.
It may have been because it's not like the guys were missing dunks. You know, they were at the rim and they were still being challenged. So both teams, but you know, okay, we have 6-point lead fine. And Mike Thomas again gives us a little spark off the bench. He's scoring, I think he had 9 points in the half. And he had a great play. He stole a pass. Threw a long pass down court, perfect pass to Hosanna, dunked it. I think it's Hosanna's third or fourth dunk of the year, but when that happens, it gives a lot of energy from the people that are there and the team. And that seemed to spark Hosanna. You know, the Cajuns are able to throw the ball into him, and if he's not scoring, going to tip in. He's actually been able to, just like in Mobile, use his moves, some power moves, some good footwork, and get some shots at the basket to fall. Great game for him. So the lead expands a little bit. Then the Jags made a mistake, I thought, late in the half. You know, they went through a zone, and our players did a great job of recognizing that. And Cantrell and Kobe went both hit threes right out of that, got them out of that. And I was really cursed by that because they recognized it right away. And our guys got the shots in the zone, and they didn't rush it. Kobe planted his feet, good elevation, followed through in the wrist. Same for Cantrell. And the lead's at 12 at the half again. And I'll say something about Hosanna. You know, not even the reason that the Jags went to the zone, despite we have a lot of good shooters, they couldn't handle Hosanna inside. So maybe they thought maybe just had a little more pressure near the basket would help us. And they were just gambling. We wouldn't make the threes, and we did. So it's halftime, just like the ULM game. It's a 12-point lead. We talked about earlier, you know, we're winning some of these games pretty comfortably, and that's a little surprise in a pretty balanced league. But other than the stretch with both troubles finishing at the rim, I thought the Cajuns played real well in the first half.
You know, you mentioned that stretch where when they went to a zone, our guys hit the shots from the outside. I've got to believe that's a couple things. That's coaching, giving them the tools to recognize that. And I know I don't know if Coach Harden had the scout on this game, but I know our coaches do an excellent job scouting, recognizing those things. So shout out to the coaching staff there, because much as we love our players, there's a reason they're doing the things that they're doing.
Yeah. Coach Harden does have a lot of input on offense. He is the director of scouting. He's involved in scouting every opponent. But there's one of the other main assistants who works with him on that, and they alternate that all three games. And that assistant is the one who usually sits right to the left of Coach Marlin. And I don't remember who it was on Saturday, but yeah. But some of that's experience too, where you have point guards like Michael Thomas in his fourth year, and Timus Folks is actually his fourth year of college ball too, counting his junior college play. They're able to recognize it right away and get guys into the right sets.
Yes.
Yeah, well, the second half starts, and the game is rougher. And just like Thursday night, more fouls are called, not as bad. But still, the Cajuns are slowly extending the lead. You know, I think it got to 14. But then, just like Hosanna had a dunk in the first half, they excited the crowd. He excites the crowd again with a couple of he gets the ball inside, and passes the ball to Joe, one behind his back. Crowd really got excited. And I'm not so keen about behind the back passes, but that's the only way he could have got it to Joe in that situation.
I meant to go back and look at the game. Is that the play that Joe was in the corner?
No, Joe was in the corner, and he cut to the basket.
Okay.
And Hosanna's on the left side of the rim, passes behind his back. Joe catches it, and he had scored on a similar play, not quite as fancy, earlier at the rim, but this time he's fouled. So Hosanna doesn't get the assist. However, still effective because Joe sinks both free throws. So the pass still, you don't get an assist if the guy gets fouled. But it still was a great play. The crowd got excited.
I'm going to have to go back and look at the game again, though, because there was a play that somebody got an offensive rebound or went inside and started to go back out towards the foul line and hit another player in the corner. And I know I'm messing up.
I remember that play, too. I think that was Hosanna as well.
Okay. And I'm going like, how did he see him? Yeah. I mean, it was an awesome play.
Yeah. So Joe and Hosanna work well together there. And I want to give Cantrell Garnett a little credit, too. He talked about the Jags playing bully ball. You know, he showed some toughness. You know, maybe the Jag guard scored a couple of times when they're trying to drive him down to the rim. But, you know, sometimes they didn't. And the reason we didn't want to double him, even though they're playing bully ball and those guys are big, we don't want to leave him open threes. You know, the Cajuns are – we're first in the conference in three-point percentage defense, and we're second in the nation in three-point percentage defense. Our opponents only make 27% of their three-pointers.
You know, you bring up a point there again, which, you know, Cantrell Garnett. I mean, we talked about Hosanna, we talked about Joe Charles, we talked about Themis Fox, Michael Thomas's play, Kobe Julian's play. I don't think he gets enough credit because if you look at the line score on the box, the numbers don't stand out. But what he does defensively really is tremendous.
Yeah. People have said, thought to me, he's really that good on defense. He seems to get fouls at times. Well, he actually guards the opponent's best perimeter player almost every game. And that's hard to see in a box score. You'd have to know what the guy does. And, you know, we can look at the stats here. Dabe is one of their big guards, and Gator and Jones. Jones is the only one who shot over 50%. Gator is the left-handed guy, and he didn't even scratch. You know, he had 17 against us in Mobile. He was one of the better players, guards in the league early in conference season. And the second half of the game in Mobile, we shut him down a little bit, and he struggled since. So
maybe he only had five. He only got five shots off and didn't make any. So,
well, yeah. So Cantrell showed some toughness there. We don't double. Tough for them to get threes when you don't double. Then if the game continues, you know, we want to put this away. We go to our 1-2-2 trap. After a timeout, you know, Bob gets criticized sometimes for calling timeouts during one of our runs. But I've noticed in recent games, teams are not scoring after the timeout when we call it after a run. We're getting stops. In this particular case, we hadn't done the 1-2-2 much, a little bit in the first half, but we went to it for the first time in the second half. We immediately got a steal and a dunk by Joe. So the run continues, actually, because of the timeout. And, you know, it's a 15, 16-point lead. Late in the game, you know, we go to our, you know, we are using this 1-3-1 only late in the games. You know, I'd like to see us use it more early in the game, but we use it for a couple of reasons. One, to make it tougher to get inside. And in this case, we want them to burn clock. They may get an open three out of it, but it's going to take a minute or so to get it. And the Jags have been a little out of sorts. You know, they weren't comfortable with their three-point shooting. And we finished the game in the 1-3-1, and they didn't really make many. So it ends up a 20-point win.
It's one of those things that I know we've talked about it a lot on here with Joe Charles especially, but I brought a friend to the game that hadn't been to a game in a couple of years, and him and his son had a good time. But talking about it, I said, you know, he said, man, that Joe Charles has got some energy. I said, you got to watch him. I said, because there's things that all of them do that don't show up in the box score. You know, it sometimes the ball is just tipped a little bit that allows to keep the ball alive where someone else gets the rebound or the steal. And so and he mentioned to me several times, he goes, that's a great example there. There's another one, you know. So this team does some things really well, and I like the way they keep the ball alive during the play, giving them the opportunity to either get another offensive rebound. And to me, that's the biggest stat of the game. 18 offensive rebounds to South Alabama 6. Yep. I mean, that's just huge. And then out-rebounding them 49-30. So, I mean, you don't do that to a lot of teams. And a team that we thought us, as the Cajuns, we're going to struggle rebounding. So,
yeah. Well, Kobe and Hosanna have improved tremendously. We had three guys in with double doubles, three forwards. Was it Kobe, Hosanna, and Joe all had double doubles?
And then we talked about Garnett, 2-for-3, from the 3-point, 4-for-6 from the field goal, 11 points. You had Michael Thomas off the bench with another 9 points. Themis with 6, you know, it just that you're seeing everybody in Ratliff with another 4. I thought that might have been Ratliff's best game.
Yeah, I love it when they actually use him and they posted up to him, clear it out, and he used a little hook and he made it. When that happens, that opens up the three for other guys.
Well, only one foul, 3 rebounds, 4 points. I'm loving the game there. If he can continue to improve, we'll get better.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Hosanna, you know, he had double-double. He was leading score with 18 points, but he also had 3 assists. And mentioned earlier, he had a couple passes where a guy went to the free throw line, so you don't get credit for the assist, but you're responsible for scoring. You know, we've talked a lot about the rebounding improvement here. In the post-game, they were asked, why has that happened? And Hosanna Contagions gave a lot of credit to Coach Philip Shumpert. Coach Shumpert, as they say, I guess he's the big man coach, and whatever drills he's running them through to have them improve their rebounding has worked. I remember I went to a rebounding club earlier in the season, and they talked about that. They said that we got a lot of work to do. I'm responsible for the rebounding. It's not where we want it, but we're going to get it there. And lo and behold, that's happened. Coach Shumpert came to us from North Carolina A&T, where he was the interim head coach last year, where they had the best team they've had for a while. He's also been a head coach in junior college, and I think that's important. I liked it when we had the opening and we brought in somebody with some experience, because what happens if Coach Marlin's sick or there's something in the family? You know, you want somebody in your bench who's been a head coach before who can handle it with a little experience. We've got a lot of young assistants on the team, so glad to see a guy with some experience come in, and I'm glad to see a player recognize that a coach is helping them improve.
Absolutely. That's great news. Thanks for sharing that with us. Mike, you know, we talked about free throw shooting. Did not get to 80%, but 77.8, so 78%. And that's because we only took 9 shots. One more free throw, if we make it, you're 8 for 10, you're at 80%. So I'm not really, and especially if you're above 75%, you're definitely not concerned about that. But yeah, for, you know,
nobody would 0 for 2.
Exactly. So, I mean, you have to go back to, you know, Texas State, where we shot under 70%. And then before that, going back, you have to go back even further to the James Madison loss, where we only hit 55%. So the team is shooting the ball well, like it. Sometimes, you know, that 3-point shooting, especially in the second half, we've kind of seen them fall off a little bit. But I think that's expected with the legs going the way they are. You know, people, it's kind of like a pitcher. People assuming that, you know, a pitcher's arms gets tired. Well, it's usually his leg that gets tired, and that's where he messes up his arm. And the same thing with shooting. You know, you got to have your feet set. You got to be planted and doing what you're doing there for the three. So not surprising.
Your feet need to be together. Need to be square to the basket. You have to elevate towards the goal. And then the hand in the cookie jar, all that, and I said a lot there, but all muscle memory. When you get tired, some of that goes away. But fortunately, we've been pretty consistent the last few games. That's going to need to continue as we go through the next two games. You know, we play Wednesday again at 7 p.m. against Georgia State, and Sunday afternoon, because of a Mardi Gras event, against Bowling Green in the Sun Belt Conference MAC Challenge. Let's talk about Georgia State a little bit. You know, the Panthers, you know, for years when Ron Hunter, now at Tulane, and Green Wave have fallen off a little bit, surprisingly. They had a good pre-conference. They were outstanding when he was at Georgia State. They're 9-15 overall this year, 4-7 in the league. They've lost 6 straight conference games. What's really strange is every one, other than one or two of those games, they've all been really close and gone down to the wire. They lost one of those in overtime. Troy is the second place team in the league with only 2 losses, and Georgia State played them to a 4-point game that went down to the wire this past weekend. So just because they're on a 6-game losing streak doesn't mean that it's going to be easy Wednesday night. Sometimes the team in that situation gets down a little early. They may get a little frustrated and say, here we go again. So hopefully we can do that. I looked at all their stats, and you know, all the stats between themselves and their opponents are pretty even. They score 78 and they give up 75. So that's a little more of a faster pace than when we play Texas State, so it should be entertaining. Now, I did notice this. Their most favorable stat is they only allow 29% of 3-point field goal percentage from their opponent. So they may have the same strategy as the Cajuns, that we're going to limit threes and let you score inside. They've got 3 really good players. Their bench may be similar to ours, you know, limited. Their leading scorer is number 3, named Lucas Taylor, at 15 points per game. Their leading rebounder is number 10, Jaden Turner, at 9 rebounds per game, rather. But their best overall player is number 1, Dwan Odom. I think he was all-conference last year, at least second team. He was preseason all-conference this year. He averages 12 points, 4 assists, and only 2 turnovers a game at point guard. I listened to Coach Marlin's radio show last night, and he mentioned Odom in the game here last year and made 3 three-pointers, which is not his game, but the rest of his game is pretty solid. So 3 guys there we really need to pay attention to, and Lucas, Turner, and Odom. And to me, the key in this game, because they're struggling a little bit, all these games that they've lost have all been close, all gone down the wire. Let's jump on them early, and maybe they'll get a little frustrated. Have you noticed that the teams are a little losing streak? Maybe they're not as bad as their record indicates, but it's easy to get frustrated when things are not going your way.
It's definitely easy to look at records and say, oh, this team is not, you know, this team, for lack of a better term, sucks, or this. That's not the case with Georgia State. You know, a 10-point loss to App State, which actually the game was much closer than that up until the last couple minutes of the game. So Georgia State is playing better. the game against Troy. I still don't think Cajun fans or people around the league understand how good Troy is right now. They are playing well, and for Georgia State to only lose by four, that's no moral victories for anybody. Trust me, I'm not a fan of Georgia State, but they played really well that game.
Yeah, well, remember when we played at Troy, we had 20 turnovers. A lot of them, I gave credit to the Trojans because they're fast hands, quick hands, a lot of steals. Well, the Panthers were able to stay close because they only turned it over 7 times. So, you know, in our press, you know, when we go to 1-2-2, we try to turn them over. I'm sure they'll be ready for that. And they'll have some confidence that they can handle the ball after only turning it over 7 times against the team that leads the league in steals. So that's Wednesday night. Important game because our next 4 conference games will be on the road. You know, roads have been tough this year in college basketball. In fact, in Kevin's article, you'll see the teams we've lost to on the road this year are 66-8 at home. And a couple of them, if you just take the top ones, there's some like 65-3 or something like that. So, wow. All those road games we played when we were frustrated back in November and December actually helped us get right now. Several of those games were pretty competitive. Remember the Toledo game, Louisiana Tech game, McNeese game. So all of those tough road games, which I think about a few of them had been at home or even on neutral courts, helped us get to where we are right now. Because the team didn't really get frustrated when things were going tough. They kept trying to improve. And so that's conference. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, I guess, when we wrap up. But we do have Bowling Green on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Glad they were able to do that because they weren't sure they would get the 2 o'clock game for a while until they figured out how to get the dome floor down quickly because of the Mardi Gras event Saturday night. So Bowling Green, nickname is the Falcons. They're 15-7 overall. They're 6-4 in the MAC. They really feel they should be 7-3 because their last game, they lost to Central Michigan, one of the better MAC teams, by 1 in overtime. So that impressed me right away. You know, okay, that played a competitive game there. I had trouble finding the overall stats, but I found the server from the Central Michigan game and Coach Borland's comments last night. I think they're pretty accurate as far as the scouting on them. They got out rebounded by 15 against Central Michigan, but they shot 16 more free throws than the Chippewas. So obviously, they like to get to the line. They gave a 50% field goal percentage, so they must want to take the three-pointer away. Look at this. They shot 33 three-pointers in that game. Now, they didn't make many of them, but they're getting to the line, and they're shooting three-pointers. That tells me they're not taking tough twos. They're either trying to get to the rim, or they're shooting threes, probably heavily at the analytics. Their best player is number 12, Rashawn Aji. He had an outstanding game against Central Michigan. 20 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. That's an overall player who can do that. Sounds similar to Joe Charles in some games, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a nice stat line. You gotta agree there.
Yeah. Their best guard is their point guard, number 0. 2 zeros, Marcus Hill is his name, and you know, team is a 0 for us. He had 22.7 rebounds and 7 assists versus Central Michigan. No other player on their stat line really pops out. From the Central Michigan game. I think they had 4 guys off the bench with a total of 12 points. Coach Marlin did say in his radio show last night that their other big man, which the name I think is, can't say it, it's a foreign Eastern European game, is a 7-footer. So they've got a talented inside player and a 7-footer inside. They want to shoot threes. But, you know, despite their size, Central Michigan shot 50% from the game. Didn't make many threes, so they found some way to get inside. Now, Jay Walker said on the radio show that he's watched a little bit of film on Bowling Green, and he says definitely the size is going to be an issue, but the Cajuns may be quicker. And we're quicker than a lot of teams. You know, Joe Charles is really quick for us forward. Thomas comes off the bench, provides a spark with his speed. So that should be a fun game Sunday afternoon. Nobody wants to play this game. You know, can't play it Saturday. Take a Bowling Green. They've got to play on Sunday. They're not going to get home probably at 10 o'clock, have class the next day on a Sunday. Throws everybody else a schedule. So hopefully next season we can go to a November, December Sunbelt MAC Challenge instead of trying to figure out where the teams match up in the middle of the season. Oh, I lost you, Craig.
And I'm talking, sorry. I was coughing and I thought I'd put the checked the mute back off. So I think the key to this game is going to be the keeping them off of the free throw line and rebounding. They only average 33 rebounds a game, but they're shooting 76% from the free throw line as a team. So to me, that's a sign of a good team that's going to do that. So the rebounding, I think if we can out rebound them, especially on the offensive board, similar to what we did to South, I doubt if we're going to do what we did to South Alabama, but keeping them off the boards is going to be huge, especially when Toledo is on
offense. Don't give them second shots.
Exactly. So, but stay out of foul trouble, especially our big guys. We're going to need you all game. So,
yeah. And then we'll go on the road next week. We go to, not next week, 2 weeks. We go to Old Dominion and App State. I watched a little bit of App State Georgia Southern game. They have some very skilled big men who look like they're very mature. Absom and Skilling, I think their names are. So that'll be quite a challenge. And I'm jumping ahead, but you know, one of our fans has said we're going to win 10 straight before we play App. So we got to win these two and one of the and the Old Dominion game. Old Dominion upset Marshall recently, so and they're up and down, but you know, that's not a sure win either. Like we talked about it just a second ago, what the record of teams that we've played on the road is. So,
real quick, Mike. People don't realize. I mean, McNeese is 12-0 at home this season, and Louisiana Tech is 11-0. So, to your point, that's 23-0 of the two teams that we played on the road this season.
Yeah, and one was a 2-point loss, and we made the Tech game closer the second half after playing poorly in the first half. And then some of our other non-conference opponents are doing well. Also, Toledo, Youngstown State, and Eastern Kentucky either lead their league or near the top of it. Samford, I think, only lost one home game, and I think they're still leading the Southern Conference. So we may not have played a P5 school for money this year, but boy, the G5 schools we played and rolled at home are really having outstanding years. So as I said earlier, all those games we played against those teams in pre-conference helped us to get to where we are now.
Absolutely. I think this is a very good – oh, excuse me. I'm trying not to cough again. I think it was a demanding road schedule, and I think that's good for us. I still think App State is the best team in the Sun Belt right now. So we're going to see what happens there. But that's a little jumping ahead of ourselves. We got games this weekend. But looking ahead quickly at the Sun Belt Conference, you and I talked off air. I kind of like the Wednesday, Saturday deal, because whatever night you played on, usually there were at least one or two games the other night. Well, this time everybody's playing on Wednesday night. I don't see a whole lot of big matchups because actually, I think the best matchup personally is the Georgia State Louisiana game. I know it's being a little bit Marshall. I'm not sure about Marshall. They head to Troy. I don't get Marshall yet. They're up and down. But here's a game I'm going to tell everybody to look out for. I think Arkansas State is playing well right now. James Madison heads to Jonesboro on Wednesday. I think Arkansas State's got a chance in this game.
Yeah, that would really help us to give the Dukes four losses. Arkansas State blew out ULM this past weekend. They had a rated a 20-point lead at half. In the first half against the Warhawks, they made 9 of 12 threes. It goes to the point that we make where our strategy is limit opponents three-pointers and live if they score inside. Our defense against two-pointers is not as good as it is against threes overall. And that's sort of by design. We take your three-pointer away, you make your run off the basket, you know, and we've been rebounding well, but we don't have a shot blocker. So, you know, we're playing to our strengths.
But you know, to your point, though, and I meant to bring this up earlier, when you talked about running them off the line and getting the ball in, I don't mind the easy layup. What I don't like is the easy layup and then the foul. So you're giving them an and one. I think our team is doing much better at that this later half of the season.
Right, because when you give up an and one, it motivates the other team, gives them energy, they play harder. I mentioned we don't have a shot blocker, but I think we have one coming in. I think I want to close with this. Back in November, we signed a player from Southwood High School in Shreveport named Jeremiah Evans. A few of us knew about it. We were asked to keep it quiet because the family didn't want to make the announcement until they felt it was appropriate. They had some guys sick in the family, and they had a ceremony at his school last week. So the signing was finally announced, I think last Wednesday, maybe a week ago, today or Thursday, something like that. He's the number three ranked player in the state. He is four-star rating by ESPN. And the game against Nacogdoches Central is one of the best teams in the state recently. He had a great stand line with over 30 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 blocks. I've watched some of the highlights on the Max Preps, and every time I see a highlight, basically see him blocking a shot. So he's a leaper, still the same size as Kyron Radliff. Hard to tell on Max Preps highlights, but I think he may be a little bit more athletic, maybe a little better leaper. So let's look forward for that next season. Maybe we'll have a guy who can help us protect the rim. You know, as a pure freshman, not sure how he can play, but you can spot play a guy like that when maybe that's a factor when some people are getting to your rim and you need to actually have some shot blockers. So something encouraging there. We'll probably still recruit other players in the spring. Don't really know what's going on there. We'll talk about that in late March or hopefully, mid-April is when you can sign people. So what else you got, Craig?
I think that's it, Mike. That's a good little run. I think you're starting to see not a whole lot, but a little separation in the standings. The Cajuns can obviously, the only thing that can Cajuns can control is what they do on the court. And let's continue. I don't expect them to go undefeated the rest of the way. Let's be honest. But at the same time, we need to win as many of those as we can to stay in that top four spots.
Let me build on that. It's basketball is not football where the talent will win the game. You know, you can just, if you're more talented, your opponent, you can run the ball down their throats or whatever. You're going to have a game in which your opponents are going to just make, 50% three pointers, no matter what you do. So like Arkansas State against ULM, you'll have a game and maybe your free throws don't drop, or for whatever reason, you're a little sloppy, or your threes don't fall. Anybody can beat anybody in college basketball. So if a loss happens here, let's not panic. Let's see how the team reacts. It's basketball. You're going to lose. It's not as often as baseball, but it's, let's be honest. The three-pointers are such a big part of the game. If you're off and your opponent's on, you're not going to win. And that can happen at random against any opponent.
Well, it's a fun time right now. Cajuns have two more at home. Come out and watch them. Support the team. They're fun. They're exciting. And if you haven't seen Hosanna play, especially lately, or Joe Charles, the team right now is playing well. Michael Thomas coming off the bench. Like I said, Ratliff, I thought, had his one of his best games. Themis Falks, all the guys. Fun to watch.
Yeah, well, I'll close like I did last week. Yes, can't promise you how any particular game is going to result, but I can promise you the team's going to play hard. Every team plays hard, but, even when their shots don't fall, they keep hustling, which is unusual. They're going to be well-prepared. We talked about Coach Shepard. Once again, I give credit to our assistants for doing a fantastic job of scouting on our opponents. We know what they're going to do to a T, and they're going to pull for each other. Hosanna's a big part of that. You'll see him clap and cheer and go crazy when his teammates do well. So look for those three things if you come out to a game. You'll enjoy it.
Absolutely. Mike, thanks as always. We'll talk to you next week. So
we'll do.
For Mike Hebert, I'm Craig Malossong. You've been listening. We're talking. We've been talking basketball. Raging Cajun basketball.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.